and welcome to the Travel Diaries podcast. I'm your host, journalist Holly Rubenstein, and here each week I'll be speaking to a very special guest about the seven chapters in their life's travel diaries. From their earliest childhood travel memory and the first place they fell in love with, to their hidden gem and what's at the top of their travel bucket list. We'll be uncovering their adventures around the world and the travel experiences and destinations that have shaped their lives. Today's episode has a particular focus on family travel, and I'm joined today by the matriarch of one of the most well-known traveling families in the world, the Bucket List family, who I'm sure many of you follow on YouTube and social media. Just before we get started, I wanted to share with you a huge family travel discovery we had earlier in the year in the Dolomites. Of course, there are loads of beachside resorts that cater to the needs of a family. But what I wasn't aware of is that in the winter, and actually in the summer too, there are these luxurious hotels dotted through the Alps that are sometimes known as Kinder hotels or family hotels that are specifically family focused. I didn't know what to expect. A family friendly hotel would honestly have been something I'd actively avoid before having my daughter, but this property was so special and sophisticated for parents that I have been waxing lyrical about it ever since. It's called Sonvis, and it is set within the breathtaking landscape of South Tyrol on a sunny hillside by the village of Lucen. One reason I had to mention it on today's episode is that Sonvis has rooms to accommodate families of all sizes, which is just so rare. It means that if you have a larger family, there's actually scope for you to all travel to a hotel and be looked after. And there are too many other things to list about what I really liked about the hotel, but I'll give you a little overview. The soothing alpine minimalist design is certainly a starting point. Then there's the childcare. The kids club was the stuff of dreams, literally like something out of some Scandi design ad, with every game and toy and make-believe house and sports facility that you could ever dream of. And the most incredible bit of all, 70 hours of free childcare for 3 years and up, and 60 hours of complimentary baby care a week. I mean, what do I need to say, right? Sold. If you're traveling with a littler one like we were, all the baby equipment was there. We didn't need to bring anything. They even have mountain prams for hiking trails that start right from the property through the entire Lucen Valley, which are just beautiful. Organic baby food is prepared. It's every kind of aspect of what you might need is thought through. There are extra warm children's pools. There's an ice rink. There's a farm with alpacas that you can take walking through the hills. There's, of course, a nursery ski slope just outside the restaurant, literally a stone's throw. You could basically see your child on the slope from being in the hotel, with its own little magic carpet, a free ski pass included in your stay for the whole family. It's definitely the hotel that I've received the most questions and messages about on social media. So if you'd like to ask me anything more about my stay, then do get in touch. I'm at Holly Rubenstein on Instagram, Threads, X, and TikTok. And it's where Isabella took her very first steps. So a very special place. Sonvis, thank you for having us. And I hope that you guys are able to check it out. It's a great property. So on to today's guest. The Bucket List family story began back in 2015 when Jessica G and her husband Garrett decided to sell everything and leave home with their two children for a journey around the world together. 8 years and another son later, they've visited more than 90 countries, have grown a following of 1.5 million YouTube subscribers and 3 million Instagram followers, and continue to find ways, big and small, to add to their lifelong travel bucket list. As a family of five, they've swum with whales in Tonga, slept in castles in Ireland, lived on a houseboat in Amsterdam, and eaten breakfast with giraffes in Kenya. Most recently, I've seen that they're out in Antarctica, having an incredible time. I think they're out there for a month. We talk about it on the episode. And Jess shares today how, having been raised a traditional all-American girl whose family favoured trips to Disney World over international travel, she never imagined that she would end up seeing so much of the world and spending so much time travelling. And yet now she's partnered with National Geographic on her debut book, all about family travel. It is a beautiful book, such a great gift for a new parent, and it provides all the know-how to fulfill your own family's bucket list, including how-tos for picking a destination, packing, budgeting, and even surviving a 12-hour plane ride. And it's these kind of practical questions, as well as her travel chapters, that now, as a parent myself, I was so excited to uncover with Jess today. I followed her and her family for years now with a mixture of admiration, awe, and envy. And it is so interesting to hear about life on the road with three little ones. So, from Belize to Rwanda, Madagascar to the Maldives, let's get started. Jessica G, welcome to the Travel Diaries podcast. Coming to me all the way from Hawaii, my most exotic guest yet, I would say. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, honestly, it is such a pleasure. We've got a lot to chat about, haven't we? Because yeah, we've got a lot to learn from you. Obviously, your incredible book, Bucket List Family Travel, which I am very lucky to have a copy of, is going to, you know, give new mums and dads so much advice. We're going to come on to that later. But first of all, I kind of wanted to uncover your travel diaries, because you must be one of the most well-traveled people that has joined me on the podcast. And what an incredible thing to have done so much of that with your family.
Oh, for sure. I was never a big traveler. Never, like, in a million. If you'd have told me 10 years ago that I would have traveled to 90 countries over, you know, the course of 8 years, I never would have believed you. It was never on my bucket list. It was never on my radar. And here I am. Garrett and I, my husband, were in a situation where we didn't know what was next in life. My husband had started a company in college and sold it, and settling down and buying a house didn't seem right. I wanted to take a couple months and travel and see what was out there and just broaden our horizons. And that 4 months of travel that we had set off for turned into 3 years of full-time travel. You know, now here we are 8 years later and 90 countries later. So yeah, it definitely evolved into what it is.
And did the children just kind of pop up along the way, so to speak?
Yeah. So we when we took off, it was 2015. Dorothy, my oldest, was almost three, and my son Manila was like 11 months. So they were pretty young, and we kind of a common theme, and I talk about this in my book, is my husband is the king of extreme, and I'm the queen of moderation. So I'm the one who's like, let's do a little bit of traveling. And those were famous last words, because then my husband is like, let's sell everything and, you know, do make a social media account as a journal, and like just spiraling out of control. So what I very much thought was 4 months of travel to Southeast Asia and we would come back and buy a house turned into so much more. But the kids went along with it, and they, you know, they did great. It was just what we were doing. It wasn't something I thought too much about, because I think had I thought way too much about it, I would have never gone, you know?
So although you obviously like really complement each other in terms of those personalities, like you say, are you both very easygoing? Because to be almost a full-time traveler, you have to be quite easygoing, don't you?
For sure. And I would say maybe on the spectrum, especially of like parenting compared to many of our friends who are also now, you know, parents over the years, I would say we are on the more laid back side of the parenting spectrum.
And that serves you guys well, which is, you know, means that you have a good time.
For sure. If you're going to be traveling to different countries all over the world, then you kind of have to be willing to let some things go.
Yeah, for sure. And so nearly 3 million followers on Instagram, 1.5 million followers on YouTube later. You have these beautifully crafted videos that, you know, showcase the destinations that you're in, as well as your gorgeous family. And we're going to uncover your bucket list family travel diaries. So we're going to go through 6 chapters today, starting with chapter 1. And that is the first place that you fell in love with as a family.
Our first place we fell in love with as a family has to have been, it was our second stop. We were in Tonga, and my husband had seen an Instagram post by a professional photographer, wildlife photographer by the name of Scotty Pertelli, and had seen that you can get in the water with whales. So it was the whales that took us to Tonga, and absolutely most bucket list experience. Everyone should have it on their bucket list. But aside from the whales, the people, the culture, just the rawness of it, we very quickly fell in love with all of the aspects that you get from travel, just being together as a family, exploring new cultures, you know, the whole wildlife thing was incredible, mm-hmm. but just the whole traveling as a whole, I think it was our second stop. It was our first real stop. And that was Tonga. And we've gone back time and time again. We don't go back to very many countries, but we've been back to Tonga about 5 times.
Wow. I mean, that feels certainly from the UK, that feels very far away. Tell me about, is it far for you guys as well?
It's so far.
I mean, you're in Hawaii, obviously.
So yeah, it's still so far. And especially where we go, it's a smaller island. It's not even like the capital city. So, I mean, we're very close. And for us, it's, you know, Hawaii to Honolulu, Honolulu to Fiji, Fiji to, you know, to Nuku'alofa, Nuku'alofa to Vava'u. It's a trek.
It's a long journey. So it's a hidden gem as well.
Absolutely. Yeah, we love it. And the people, every Sunday we go to church, or you can literally walk around the island and hear everybody in church. The island shuts down on Sunday and everyone sings these a cappella hymns. And it's just so beautiful. It's one of my very favorite things about the country.
Oh, wow. So if a family was now inspired to visit Tonga, what would you say they should do on their first visit? Any tips for where to maybe stay and like an activity that they mustn't miss?
Well, Tonga is one of those places that if you are going to go through an operator who can help facilitate accommodations. Mm-hmm. They are lacking. It is not a typical beach destination where it's made for tourists. It is made for, these whale watchers or, you know, people who want to swim with them. So it is for that, but it is raw and it is not a touristy. We're kind of used to going to Jamaica or Mexico where they cater to tourists. No, they don't cater to tourists there. So mm-hmm. finding a local who can help set you up in a good home or bed and breakfast or something like that. And then one of our favorite things besides swimming with the whales is a cave called Swallow's Cave that is normally filled with a bait ball of fish. And you can dive through that kaleidoscope of fish and they swim all around you. And the kids are so into it. And that's always a stop for us every single day on our way in and out with the whales. So
that sounds incredible.
Tonga and Vava'u, and then the Swallow's Cave is a big, big must for that spot.
Wow. I mean, so many of the incredible experiences you share with your children are centered around wildlife, aren't they?
Yeah, definitely.
Is that a conscious decision on your part in terms of their education?
Just early on, you know, like I said, Tonga was our second stop and we fell in love with wildlife. I would say my husband is especially the ocean wildlife aspect. My heart is in Africa. I love Africa and the bush. But now I would say a good chunk of our travels are geared around, you know, seeing wildlife in their natural habitat. So
yeah,
that's where we go. And a lot of times we're following migrations or certain events that happen at specific times of the year. You know, last spring break, we were in Mexico with the gray whales when they have their babies. And then we'll go to Africa and to Tanzania to see the Great Migration. So different things like that.
Wonderful. I mean, chapter 2 is the place where you learn the most about yourself as a family. I mean, obviously seeing the circle of life is super educational. What comes to mind for your second chapter?
To me, that question kind of is always turned towards like, what has changed us the most? What countries, you know, really had the biggest impact on our life? And that for me, and I know my husband, would be Rwanda.
Oh, wow.
We went to Rwanda we flew into Kigali, and I was nervous. All I really knew about Rwanda was what I had seen in Hotel Rwanda. So I was a little like, this could be a little sketchy, and it 100% changed my life seeing everything. I mean, as soon as you fly in, have you been to Rwanda by chance?
No, I would love to go. Oh my gosh. For the wildlife. Yeah.
Yeah. Put it on the top of your bucket list. But we were there mostly for the gorillas, but it wasn't the gorillas that changed my life. It was when you fly in, it's unlike any other African country I've been to. And it kind of looks like, I mean, what you might call a third world country, but it's not. It's clean and people are very well kept and nobody was on their cell phones. And we flew in on the last Saturday of the month. And the last Saturday morning of the month, the whole country participates in a service day and nobody works. And it was so beautiful to see everyone just out helping each other. And then twice a month, they do like a mandatory outside fitness day.
That's so interesting. How progressive.
Oh, I know. And then going on day two to the Rwanda Memorial, to the Genocide Memorial Building, and seeing what had happened really firsthand. And you know, we've done a bit of historical travel and you know, been to some sites. And normally it's like black and white photos. So to go and see these photos that were color photos from the 90s, I don't know why it just hit me so hard and how close this was to me and my generation and how it was, you know, 10 to 15 years ago. And, and then learning how absolutely horrific it was, and what people were doing during that genocide. And then at the very end, there's a guy who says in like a little video, and he says, you can either choose to cultivate love or cultivate hate. And he said, we chose love. Literally the Rwandans put down their weapons. You know, it was neighbors killing neighbors, families killing families. And they just dropped weapons and they said, no more. And there was a whole process of how they came back, but it blew my mind. And I mean, even in today's world, there's so much hatred, but to see the example of goodness and love and forgiveness, it was the most beautiful thing ever. And it changed me forever. And then the gorillas are the best too, but that country, the people there, it's the safest Resilient place people. Turned out to be the most beautiful, life-changing culture and history that I've ever experienced.
Chapter three then, Jess, is your all-time favorite destination as a family, the big one. So hard to pick. What comes to mind
today?
It's
so hard to pick. And I know everybody has a different favorite. So I will say probably our favorite as a family will be the Maldives. There's a very special, we've gone back to a specific property in the Maldives called Sineva Johnny. And it's, have you been?
No, I've been invited to go actually. So I'm hoping that we'll go soon.
Drop everything and go right now.
I am so keen to go. I was wondering whether I should wait until my daughter was a bit older. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree. It literally even a year older would be great.
So she could really enjoy it. So tell us about it, because I mean, obviously they've done so well. They were, you know, both in the world's 50 best lists, I think, in terms of the hotels, and its reputation precedes it. But what makes it special to you? You guys have been to so many hotels. So what made that them stand out?
Well, number one is their sustainability. It's just beyond words of how good they are at the whole sustainability aspect of travel. So that's really cool. But my kids would never say that. My kids, like everything for them that they want to do, they're given so much freedom with a little bike to cruise around in, and then these kids clubs and then daily activities. And they have a whole kids program to learn about. I mean, all sorts of different topics. We did one that was like astronomy, and then we've done one that was on conservation, and we've done one on like plastic.
So cool.
So just like, I would say as far as like kids at any age, it's just nonstop fun for them. And a lot of it too is very enriching. And then on top of that, you have the whole water side of stuff. They have manta rays nearby you can go see, and some great scuba diving and then great food. It's, I would say resort wise, I don't know if you can get better than Sineva.
Really? Oh, okay. Noted. I'm going to make it there one day. It is a truly like, it's like a kind of perfect honeymoon destination. Like it's a dreamy place, isn't it? I've seen some photos. So yeah, listeners, look it up because it is amazing. Aside from the Sinevas, if you were to ask your kids what their favorite hotel was, what do you think they'd say?
See, I keep giving these like super beyond luxury brands. We just went to Mia Vana in Madagascar, and I know they would say Mia Vana was also just very, very, very special.
Oh, tell me about Madagascar, because I don't know that much about it. It actually has come up a few times on the podcast.
Really?
Some of my guests' favorite destinations. Yeah.
It's incredible. I would not recommend Madagascar if you're a newbie traveler. If you're an experienced traveler, then 100% you should go. I was very surprised when we flew in. I think I just was expecting it. I was expecting something different, and it wasn't that. I don't know if you've noticed this when you travel, Garrett, and I also talk about how I feel like different countries have a different hue. Like Australia is kind of this like golden color, and then Madagascar is kind of this like dusty color. queue over everything. But then you get, fly into Antananarivo and it's just packed. And everywhere you go, it kind of looks like you could take a picture for National Geographic, just the people, it looks like everything's just got a story behind it. So that side of things. And then getting out into the jungle was so, it was a 5 hour drive, but like a 30 minute drive or 30 miles, but it took like 5 hours.
Cause the roads were so bad.
Just cause the roads are so bad. So it's not, although I recommend it, it's not for the faint of heart. It's for someone who's like dedicated and patient and understands, you know, countries are countries no matter where they are. And going out to the jungle. And we had just spent 3 months in Africa. So I had been on edge for 3 months, you know, like, don't go over here. Don't touch this. And be quiet for the lions, you know, like being out in the bush. I was like always really on high alert with the kids. And then you get to Madagascar and nothing there wants to kill you. Nothing. So all of a sudden we go from these like safari, Jeep safaris. And then in Madagascar, everything is like a walking safari. So you're out, you're in the rainforest, you're looking for lemurs, you're looking for chameleons, you're looking for bugs. Like it's, and everything there only exists in Madagascar, which is so cool.
That's so cool. So you're having like a once in a lifetime wildlife experience when you get there.
Totally, totally. So when you go to Madagascar, you'll want to make sure you spend a couple days in the rainforest. And then you'll fly. And then there's different, you know, you can get a beach experience. Definitely go through a good tour operator who can kind of give you the full Madagascar experience. But the culture there.
And you flew by helicopter into one of the places I just saw.
We did. Miavana is accessible only by helicopter. And their day activities is also by helicopter. So if you want to go see some lemurs or if you want to go check out a different hike or different things like that, it's by helicopter, which my youngest son is helicopter obsessed. He was thrilled.
So it was the dream. So, but it obviously, therefore, like, as you say, sounds to be like a more intrepid destination.
Absolutely. Yeah.
How about, in terms of all time favorites, then what do you think Garrett would say?
Garrett is always going to pick a water destination. And he also is funny because when people ask him, his answer changes.
I mean, as it kind of would do for everyone, right?
It's true. Like, so sometimes he says Tonga, which we already spoke about. And then other times he says one called Dominica, which I know is another question of yours of what country is the hidden gem. And
yes.
Dominica, not to be confused with Dominican Republic, is a country in the Caribbean. And it is beautiful and mountainous and green and lush. And we were there to swim with the sperm whales. It's one of the few places in the world where like families of sperm whales are almost always there. And it just was waterfalls and hikes. There was so much more there available besides the sperm whales. We were so pleasantly surprised. We stayed at a property on the other side of the island called Rosalie Bay, which is one of the beaches in the world where the leatherback turtles come and lay their eggs. And leatherbacks, if you don't know what a leatherback is, it's the size of a giant truck tire. Like it's like ginormous. And they'll wake you up in the middle of the night to go and watch these leatherbacks lay their eggs. And it is such an incredible experience. So between the turtles and the sperm whales and the waterfalls and the amazing food, a lot of the food in the Caribbean comes from Dominica. So it was just all this fresh island produce. Dominica was totally a hidden gem and I know one of Garrett's favorites.
Oh, that's such a great recommendation. How would you swim with the sperm whales as a family? Like, how does that work? What actually is the experience? How close do you get?
So with sperm whales, it kind of differs like depending on other whales that you're with. But if you're with sperm whales, to find them, you drive out on the boat, maybe a mile. And then they put a hydrophone in the water and they listen for the clicking.
Oh my goodness.
And then once they hear the clicking, they can kind of know, okay, it's this direction. And so then we'll take off, you know, another mile or so in that direction and do it again. Or, you know, and then all in the meantime, you're waiting for the whale to come up and take a breath. So normally it takes, I don't know, an hour, if that, to find the whales. And then when you get there, you try to position yourself in the boat so you can just kind of be there as they pass by and they're super aware of you and really docile and just beautiful creatures. We also swam with them this summer in and Mauritius, and just looking like alien. They look like aliens, but so incredible.
That sounds magical. So are you scuba diving? Are you snorkeling?
You're snorkeling. Yep, you're snorkeling.
Yeah. Oh, and so how young did your kids start snorkeling, and what tips would you give to parents who would love to get out in the water with their kids?
I do have a little section in my book that talks about teaching your kids to swim. Swimming in the ocean has been such a big part of our family adventures. So teaching your kids at a very young age to swim, and it's been this huge building blocks that have led up to swimming with whales in the ocean. But, you know, teaching your kids to just put your face in the water, and then, you know, how to blow bubbles, and then how to wear a mask, and how to kick. So just everything has just built. And I think the most important thing, aside from like the actual skill, is teaching your kids to trust you, to say, hey, we're going to go get near this huge humpback whale. Trust me, you know? And when I say, hey, take a deep breath, we're going to go down, they'll do it. And it's been years and years of not only practice, but of building trust with the kids, and they're really good at it.
Yeah. And I mean, I imagine at home in Hawaii, you guys spend a lot of time out in the water as well, because they're big into surfing, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Since we moved here, definitely water babies.
Yeah. I imagine that you've uncovered so many other hidden gems along the way, because the magic of what you guys get to do is that you're spending extended periods of time in a destination. I think that's the thing that's really different. You know, I'm an avid traveler, but I've never got to spend more than, you know, a few weeks maximum in a place. Really, hardly ever even that long. So when you really can get your teeth into a country, what other places have you really felt like you've discovered because you've almost lived as a local?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I wish, honestly, my dream scenario would be like, let's go to an area of the world and be in one place for a month, you know, to really like enjoy it. So the places that we've stayed long enough to do that has been a London or a New Zealand, or a Portland, Oregon. We moved to Portland. I don't want to say moved to Portland again. We went to Portland, Oregon for 6 weeks, you know, so really trying to get like a good feel for that. But my absolute favorite, we applied for a visa even years ago, got a visa, and then I got pregnant with my third. And if I could move anywhere, 1000%, I would move to New Zealand in a heartbeat.
Really? So did you stay on both islands, or?
We did both islands. I think we did about a week and a half on each island. I especially love the South Island. I love Queenstown in that area. I think there's nowhere more beautiful on this planet. And I would highly recommend it to anybody.
Yeah. Was it the landscape in particular that you fell in love with?
Yeah, I definitely the landscape. But then the people are just really down to earth, and everything's fresh and clean. And it feels like the earth, the way God meant it to be.
Yeah, I haven't been there, but I imagine that is what it looks like. In the UK, it's not the same, but have you ever been to the Highlands of Scotland?
It is so, so similar. And Garrett, the whole time, he was like, this reminds me so much of the Highlands. Very similar. And
really,
just like you said, wonderful spot. And I know they filmed a lot of the Lord of the Rings in, you know, Northern Scotland as well, because it's so similar to New Zealand.
We're quite lucky to have that on our doorstep because it's a long flight to New Zealand.
Oh my gosh, so far. Yeah. So have you spent much time up in the Highlands?
We did a road trip through the Highlands in 2019, going through the Cairngorms and along to Skye and the Kintail Mountains. It was a really rare stretch of time where it was pure sunshine, because Scotland is a bit hit or miss.
Yeah, totally.
And I don't think the locals really knew what to do with themselves, because it was like hot. They didn't have seating outside to accommodate for this. But we really fell in love with it. Actually, my husband's family live in Scotland.
Oh, great.
So we get to go up there a bit. And it's definitely somewhere that I'd like to go more of, because, you know, like 120 episodes into the podcast now, one of the most mentioned destinations are the Scottish islands. So like the Isle of Mull and the Isle of Skye, and the more remote, the kind of more they seem to be mentioned. You know, I think the more remote, the more wild the landscape is and the wildlife is. So I haven't really explored beyond the mainland. So the islands are on my list. Have you been to any of the islands?
I'll have to put that on my list. Those sound really awesome. Are they just all along the coastline, or is it mostly more north? Where I'm just trying to think of a map.
I'll actually get a map up. It's there's the Inner and Outer Hebrides, which are two kind of collection of islands. But I think that the island that comes up the most is Orkney and Mull. They have amazing seals, whales. So maybe we'll spot you there sometime next year.
Yeah. If you go, let me know. I love the UK. I love it so much.
Today's family travel special of the Travel Diaries is supported by Beachcomber Resorts and Hotels. And this, my listeners, truly could not be a better fit, because Beachcomber are the ultimate family escapes. They have 8 hotels sprinkled across the dreamy island of Mauritius, all on beautiful beaches, giving you the chance to get away from the bustle of everyday life and relax in an exceptionally beautiful natural setting. I've got my eye on Paradis Beachcomber, which is tucked between a vast lagoon off the west coast of Mauritius and Le Bon Brabant Mountain, which is a UNESCO World Heritage Site. It's a 5-star family resort with lush gardens, a golf course, and a long stretch of sugar white sandy beach with warm, crystal clear waters, perfect for water sports and an abundance of nature-related activities for all the family to enjoy. Mauritius has such a great reputation for family holidays. For its gorgeous climate, its scenery, and its people, it has direct flights from the UK, and time and time again, I've heard from families who've traveled to Beachcomber's properties who have created unforgettable memories. So for a tropical family holiday unlike any other, with endless opportunities for fun and adventure, Beachcomber Resorts and Hotels are the place to stay. Book your next getaway at beachcomber.com. That's beachcomber.com. Thank you so much to Beachcomber Resorts and Hotels. Chapter 5 is your worst travel experience, or the place that you would never go back to. Where comes to mind?
Oh, never go back to. I mean, that's kind of different than worst travel experience. We got robbed in Cape Town, but I would gladly go back to Cape Town. You know, and when we were traveling full time, and when everything you own is in, you know, 3 suitcases, and one of those goes missing, you know, a car had been broken into. That was really tough for us. That was really it was scary, and it was a wake up call. That sometimes the world isn't all roses. And having to tell our kids, I remember my oldest daughter, Dorothy, had a princess apron that someone had gifted her, and that went missing. And she was beside herself, so devastated. But that was one of our hardest times, and we were still on the road. So we had to rebuy everything.
I'm sorry that happened. That must have been really awful. And I imagine that, especially when you're traveling with children, you just can't envisage that somebody would do something like that. So it must have
totally. But then, and unfortunately, it sounds like it happens all the time. Everybody I told there, I was like, listen to what happened to me. And they were like, yeah, don't leave anything in your car. Like, it was just like a shame on you kind of a thing, which sure. I didn't realize that, you know? But yeah, unfortunately, that's just something you need to be aware of.
Yeah. Yeah. And how about a place that you wouldn't go back to? Is there one that comes to mind for that?
You know, I would not go back to Antigua, another island in the Caribbean. I didn't think, I didn't think it was super welcoming. And I didn't think the water was anything to write home about. I just probably wouldn't go back there.
That's interesting. So you've traveled quite extensively around the Caribbean.
Yeah.
So it's really good to get those kind of thoughts, because people must spend hours painstakingly like trying to weigh up the pros and cons of different islands. But it seems like Dominica is the number one wreck for you.
Yeah, we love that one. But I think Antigua, if I remember correctly, I think they had a direct flight from London. So I feel like a lot of British travelers go to Antigua.
Yeah, I've been there.
Oh, you have? What did you think?
I remember thinking it was really very pleasant. I think it's kind of just like a very easy holiday, you know.
Sure.
I went when I was much younger, and I think it probably caters very well for family yeah. resorts. But I don't remember doing anything much more beyond
a resort vacation.
Yeah. What would you say is your ultimate family travel destination for maybe people who aren't intrepid yet, that they're wanting sure. to get up the courage? Because actually, you know, obviously you're the farthest end of the spectrum in terms of intrepidness with your kids, but you know, I traveled just around a bit in Europe when my daughter was, you know, 5 months, 7 months, 10 months or something. And a lot of my friends and things were like, oh, wow, you're going to travel? My God, you're so brave. Which, you know, I wasn't doing anything brave at all. I was just going to stay and review nice hotels for my job.
Yep.
But, you know, still, it is intimidating with kids traveling. So where would be a good place for the more nervous traveler to yeah. maybe dip their toe in the water?
I'll give you two. I'll give you one stateside and I'll give you one international, at least for the US.
Amazing.
Base.
Perfect.
So I would say international for US travelers, if you're a beginner traveler, we love Belize. Belize is a direct flight from many cities, from Dallas, from Denver, from Miami. And they take the US dollar. They speak English. But still a unique culture. You can get the rainforest there. You can get the beach there. Some of the, honestly, maybe top three reefs that I've ever experienced. Just incredible diving and snorkeling. Like I said, they've got the rainforest. So I think Belize is a great first step into international travel.
And it's not too... it's not too overdeveloped yet, isn't it?
No, absolutely. No, I'm glad you said that. Yeah. No, not at all. Lovely people. A good place to dip your feet into international travel if you're US based. And then for a good US spot, that's hard. I really, really, I'm going to say Alaska. It's a little bit farther away, but kind of feels like a foreign country. Just different. To live in darkness half the year, you kind of got to be a different type of person. So to see what that is like, and the people up there, they're tough, you know? But if you can go, especially during the summer, during that June to September months, and get in some fishing and seeing the bears and just all the hikes, it's incredible. The wildlife is beautiful. The people are lovely. The food is delicious. Like it's a great spot with so much fun family adventure. We really liked Alaska, and I would go back there in a heartbeat.
Oh, that's such a great recommendation. On the podcast, Alaska's come up a few times, but via cruises.
Okay.
Did you go kind of by plane? Like, what was your kind of itinerary when you were there?
No. So we were there for, it was 2020. It was when it was very difficult to travel during COVID, and we were all stateside. So we went and we stayed a couple nights at a property called Tordrillo Mountain Lodge, which is incredible. And they're also, like Miavana, a very helicopter focused property. You fly in on a float plane, you land on a lake, and then all of your daily adventures are via helicopter. They'll take you up to the top of the mountain peaks to go fishing or to go on a hike or do a via ferrata. In June, I know they have a season where in the morning, I believe, you go skiing, and then in the afternoon you go fishing for king salmon. And I'm like, that would be amazing. So we spent a couple of days at Tordrillo and, you know, did a bunch of lake activities, and wake surfing and e-foiling, and it's freezing, but you get over it. It's super fun. And then after that, we went down to Homer, Alaska, spent a couple nights in Anchorage. Anchorage is a cool city just in and of itself. And then driving down to Homer is just stunning and beautiful. And then Homer, you know, you can go out on the boats and you can catch halibut, see some whales, and just more fishing. But it's a really cool spot.
Oh, wow. If you don't mind me asking, I imagine that sometimes my listeners might want to ask, how do you finance your travels? Mm. Because obviously when you're saying, you know, we went on a helicopter, yeah. this, that, and the other, like, how does it work for you guys?
Well, and I talk about this in my book, our financial situation is unrelatable to most people. Garrett in college had an app and he sold it to Snapchat, and we had a savings, you know, a pretty reasonable savings that, you know, if we were smart with it, we wouldn't need to work the rest of our lives. But when we travel, when we took off to travels, we sold everything. We didn't want to touch that safety net, the money we had from the acquisition. We decided we're not going to touch this. And we sold everything, which got us about $45,000. We didn't own a home or anything. We sold car, furniture, clothes, all the things, made about $45,000. And we had said, when this money's out, we're done. And for us, 2015 was pre-travel influencer. Yeah. It was the very very, very beginning. I would say for our timing, it was impeccable of why our audience grew. Part of why our, you know, we've had an audience with us. A lot of it was the timing. So we have traveled on a budget at the very beginning. You know, we had $45,000 and we wanted to take it as far as we possibly could. Had 4 months of travel included. And then after that, you know, the world of travel influencing kind of became a thing. And I would say, after that money ran out, we probably went a year and a half where we just completely broke even, where we had some stuff comped, some stuff barely paid. And then maybe after a year and a half is when we like started to make money and actually were able to make a career out of it.
I mean, what an incredible story. Firstly, though, I would like to ask, how did it feel to sell everything? Like, what was that?
It was really freeing, but also super, super difficult. I think of the story where my mom had bought me these plates for our wedding, just a really nice kind of, you know, china set. And we had moved a lot in the first five-ish years of our marriage. Just, we were in San Francisco, we were in Utah, we were in LA, we had been all over the place. And these plates went with me everywhere we went. I never used them, never, not once. Like maybe once or twice on like a Thanksgiving or something like that. And selling these plates was really hard for me.
Yeah.
You know, but kind of taking the moment to realize they're just plates.
Yeah.
You know, and I would rather have some memories with my family than plates that I don't use. I know, I'm sure my mom is probably like, I'm really sad I gave you those plates. I want you to take my plates. But everyone in our family has sacrificed something in order for us to have these travels and moments together. And for me, I learned it very early on when we sold everything and I had to give away my plates.
So would you say that your children have therefore grown up to not be at all materialistic? Because they're not traveling with a huge amount with them.
They know. And our family rule is you carry your own stuff. So if our kids want to have a lot of toys, then they got to carry them with them. But they're not too attached to things, which is really nice. Yeah.
Well, we are on to the final chapter of your travel diaries before we go on to chat about your incredible book. And that is chapter 6, the destination at the top of your travel bucket list. Where would you love to go as a family that you've not been to yet?
Going on the theme of wildlife, I'm trying to pick which one would be at the top. I'm going to go ahead and say Borneo would be at the top of my list to see the orangutans.
Yeah.
I think those creatures look incredible and I would be so excited to see them in their natural habitat. And then I also think Borneo would be a really unique country to visit as well.
Yeah. Oh, is that like on the potential agenda? Like how far in advance are you planning your travels? How does it work? How do you plan?
Yeah, normally we are almost a year out or so. Next summer is kind of different. We've got some weddings, some family weddings. So for the first time, our itinerary is like a little bit on hold because we're like, we have to be at these weddings. But normally we're about a year out. And I would say the majority of our travels are places we want to go. You know, next year we're going to Antarctica and
oh my goodness.
Hopefully we can get out to Southeast Asia. That's where we want to be. We want to be in Borneo and then we want to be in Laos, maybe get to China and see the panda bears, Vietnam, Cambodia. Those are all places that we haven't been to that we're really anxious to get to. I hope we can get there next year. And then other times it's tourism boards or destinations that reach out to us. And then, you know, we're also excited to go to those places.
Wow.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Today's episode is supported by Airbnb, and what a great partnership. If you're a longtime listener of the Travel Diaries, you probably know that we love to put our home on Airbnb when we're traveling. Like last autumn when we took the family to Puglia, we put our house on Airbnb when otherwise it would just be sitting empty, which meant that we earned some extra money that went towards our flights and maybe some souvenirs too. Hosting on Airbnb for us is also a family affair. My mum is an Airbnb superhost. She regularly has guests stay in her little chalet in her garden, and my dad, who lives in France, has his home on Airbnb so that when he comes back to visit, he is earning some extra money while he's away. My dad is 80 and he only started hosting on Airbnb a couple of years ago. So hopefully that shows you how straightforward the whole experience is. He found it so easy to list his house that I think he's got all his pals signing up now too. And it really is straightforward. You can choose whether you want to rent out your entire home or just some rooms. Alex and I, for example, list our spare bedroom and that works really well for us. So if you have a trip coming up and you want to earn some extra money while you're away, your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.co.uk/host. That's airbnb.co.uk/host. Thank you to Airbnb.
Antarctica is another destination that comes up time and time again on the podcast as just the ultimate. So I can't wait to see.
Really? Oh, I'm so happy to hear that.
Yeah.
We went to the Arctic this summer with Lindblad and National Geographic, and it was incredible. And we were one of the very few people on the boat who hadn't been to Antarctica yet. And so everybody was like, if you think this is good, then go to Antarctica and it'll blow your mind. So we're very excited. We're taking the kids out of school for like a full month. And yeah, it's going to be great.
For a full month in Antarctica?
Yeah, the trip that we're going on is 25 days.
No
so everybody we spoke with said, you have to go to the Falklands, which we've been to the Falklands, to go to the Falklands and to South Georgia Island. I think anytime you see a National Geographic or a Planet Earth special on, you know, the South Pole, it's almost always filmed in South Georgia. Yeah. So they're like, if you want real life. Anyway, so we took the long itinerary, which is a 25-day trip.
Wow. That is going to be epic. I can't wait to follow along. You said that you're taking the kids out for a month. So for people to get a kind of gauge of their education and how it all works with so much travel, like how does it work? Can you tell us?
So after 3 years of traveling full time, we bought a house in Hawaii. And we've been lucky to have a school that is understanding of our career. But at the same time, I try not only for the school thing, but I want the kids to have some consistency in life. So every holiday we take off. And a lot of times we'll add on a week, sometimes maybe two, to spring break or fall break. So they still miss school, but the school's been so far understanding and supportive of it. I know we're getting into the phase right now where it's going to be difficult. Dorothy's in fifth grade and she's going to miss a lot this February, March when we go to Antarctica. So I don't know how much longer we're going to be able to keep up with that, but so far it's been okay for them missing a little bit of second grade and kindergarten and stuff
Are you kind of homeschooling along the way?
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. And then when we leave, the teachers give us a whole bunch of stuff. And when we did our summer, we called it summer semester on safari. The kids every week we do a big like in depth on a specific animal, and then we have them present it and like do a whole research project on giraffes because we saw the giraffes in Kenya or whatever. So we definitely try to like bring in all of that world schooling.
That's great. I mean, so many people that I've met in my lifetime have kind of dreamed of doing something like what you guys are doing, you know, taking the family off to, as you say, kind of have that kind of world education on a big traveling adventure. I imagine people ask you that all the time, like, should we do it? Like, is it, how does it work? You know, is it worth the risk? Will my kids be okay? Like, what is the key advice that you'd give to somebody who's contemplating doing something major like that?
I would highly recommend it. It's not for everybody. We have some good friends who they did it. They sold everything and they, you know, rented a van and were doing it. And then a month in, they were like, this is not for us. So I know they don't regret it, but at the same time, you have to realize if it's for you. To me, I would take an extended trip. My 3-4 months of summer vacation is easier to me than a week off for spring break. And I actually pack the exact same amount of clothes. My bags look almost the exact same. Yeah. When you can get on the road and get into a groove, get into a routine, it's so much easier. You know, and I have friends all the time, like traveling and text me being like, how do you do this all the time? And I'm like, it's so much easier when you are gone for an extended period of time. And you're not missing home and you're not missing routines. You don't realize the birthday parties you're skipping out on. But when you're full time, it's your life. Yeah. And to me, that's actually easier than a 10-day trip wherever you decide to go. Like that's exhausting, That's exhausting for everybody.
Well, there's certainly a lot more pressure as well, isn't there? Because you've got that finite amount of days to kind of have a great time and fit everything in and see everything that you can see. And yeah.
Totally.
Yeah, having that ease.
So I would highly recommend the, you know, a month at least or a summer going to Europe or picking a spot and like really like diving in, like wholeheartedly would recommend that.
Yeah, before selling all of your stuff, maybe as a way to dip your toe in the water.
Yeah, exactly.
And so obviously you mentioned that you're in the Arctic there with National Geographic. How did it feel to be collaborating with such an institution on your book?
Oh my goodness. It was summer 2020 and we were at a lake house and I had a friend ask me, what's your dream deal? What's your dream partnership? Like, what's the goal? And we had said National Geographic. And I kid you not, 2 days later, we got an email from an editor at National Geographic and said, hey, have you ever considered writing a book? And frankly, I hadn't. Garrett and I don't consume books. I mean, if I'm listening to, I would listen to a podcast 10 times before I would like have the time to sit down and read a book. So we created what we call our Bucket List Friends, and it's kind of our own little podcast, and we share our information that way. But when Nat Geo came around, I was like, 100%, I will write a book with you. When they asked us, they had asked both of us. And I turned to my husband and I said, this is going to be my project. Like Garrett's got, you know, I've followed that man all over this world. And he's the creator, you know, he's the videographer, he's the photographer, and I'm a good writer. So I was like, this is going to be my project. He's working on other stuff. And I have loved this experience. Absolutely loved it. Had a wonderful editor and team that I'm working with at National Geographic. I've been so happy. I will say now that the book is out, I'm a little bit nervous on like the self-promotion part. I feel like I oftentimes hide behind my family and my kids and my husband.
Really?
So now I'm like leaving the band, but I feel like I'm leaving the band and going solo. I'm like, oh, I don't know if I can handle this attention, but I am so thrilled with how it turned out. I feel like moms oftentimes don't have, you know, something to share for their work. You know, we work, we cook, we clean, we do all this stuff and you don't ever have something to show for it. And so for the last 4 years, I've like created something that I can like hold in my hands. And when we went to Washington, D.C. this summer and I was at Nat Geo headquarters, I felt like such an imposter. But there was a second where I was, there was this hall and it has all these explorers on the wall. And then I was like, you know what? I deserve to be here. Yeah. I have traveled around this world many, many times and I deserve to be here. And it was a really cool feeling.
That is awesome. What is the main thing you would like your readers to take away from the book?
I think the main thing I would like them to get from the book is just stepping outside your comfort zone. I am 100%. I am a very conventional. I'm the conventional girl from America, like all American girl. Grew up with parents, worked 9 to 5, super happy. You know, like nothing was wrong whatsoever with the lifestyle I was living. But taking a chance to live outside of the box has been such a rewarding experience for me and my family. And it doesn't need to be, you know, I don't want people to think that, oh, I got to sell everything and travel around the world. But, you know, maybe taking trips that are outside of your comfort zone. I don't know how it is for like your family, but my family grew up a Disney World family. We went to Disney World every year. I love Disney World. But I think a lot of families are these traditional, they have their place. Yeah. You're a Hawaii family.
We were a Miami family.
You're like Pell family. You're a Miami family. Yeah. I was a Disney World family. So to like, and don't get me wrong, I love those trips. There's so much nostalgia and wonderful things and traditions that happen. But if you can just get outside your comfort zone and pick a different destination, there's so many different places. My brothers, I love them so much. They're still Disney people. And I'm like, you guys have a free place to stay in Hawaii. Like, come to Hawaii. Like, just people like trying to see what else is out there. And I would love people who read my book just to maybe get a glimpse of some other potential bucket list adventures that are out there.
That. Side note, so many of my listeners want to go to Hawaii. For people who would like to visit Hawaii though, what's your number one favorite spot?
Ooh, that's hard. You have to look at each island. Each island is so very different. So, so very different. It kind of depends on what you're going for. If you're going for wildlife and ocean, I would say go to Kona, Hawaii. If you're looking for fun and play and relaxation, then go to Maui. If you're looking for a little more like just stuff to do, like if you want more typical touristy stuff, go to Pearl Harbor and go to Honolulu and go to the, you know, do all those fun things. And then if you just want like a jungle oasis, then go to Kauai.
I love Kauai. That's my favorite island of them all.
Oh, really? It's beautiful.
I'd love to go back. What an amazing place. What made you choose it?
My husband would have taken any island. And then there was this particular town that we visited. And as soon as I was there, I was like, okay, I can do this spot. I can do this town. And we've loved it. We really love it. We negotiated. He was like, I choose Hawaii for 3 to 5 years and then you choose where we go next.
Oh my goodness.
And he 100% tricked me and now we're here for good because I just can't picture leaving.
Very, very clever man.
Yes.
So your book has all these incredibly like helpful chapters for families to travel themselves. Mm. We've covered a few of them already, but I'd love to ask you a bit about some more. For example, ultimate packing hacks.
Packing hacks as a mom, I think the most important thing to know is that babies are everywhere. And so you can get things everywhere.
I filled my suitcases with nappies. My goodness.
Right? So you learn early on, especially if you're traveling for an extended period of time, like I was, that you can get diapers and wipes and formula and everything anywhere in the world. And so just overpacking, just less is more. I picture the families that show up to the airport when they've got the car seat and they've got the stroller and they've got the pack and play and they've got three suitcases full. And I'm like, oh, I feel so bad for you. But it's just a lot. Yeah. So, you can do laundry everywhere you go. You can buy diapers everywhere you go and just taking out a lot of the stress of things that come when you have too much.
You are so right. I've got to adopt that for my travels moving forward. Finally, the last thing I wanted to ask you about was another chapter that I thought was really cool for you to include, which was about traveling while pregnant.
Yeah.
Can you share some of the advice that you include there?
So I was traveling pregnant with my son, Callie, through the whole entire pregnancy up until maybe 6 weeks before my due date. And he was my third. So I think that's a big disclaimer. If it was my first, I would have been like, I got to be at every appointment. I got to, you know, like I know I would have been so much more nervous. So by this time I knew the drill. I knew my body. I know how I function and I felt good and healthy. So disclaimer, talk to your doctor and your physician and get their advice first. But traveling while pregnant, it's tough on your body. The flying is tough on your body. But I remember we were in Cape Town, and that was when my like nausea hit me. But going into a pharmacy and just being able to get whatever I needed to help with that was super easy.
It's a bit
and
like what you're saying. There are babies everywhere. Like there are people who are pregnant everywhere too.
There's doctors everywhere. Yeah. And you know, and I will say I tried to be as smart as I possibly could. I was in big cities. I wasn't going super remote. I would never want to like risk, heaven forbid, some sort of emergency happening. So if I had to go to a hospital, I was never, you know, farther than an hour away from decent healthcare. And then listening to your body, you know, if your body is like, don't climb that mountain, you should be like, okay.
Yeah. But I think it's really inspiring to include that story, because it can become a time in your life where so much kind of changes, and to kind of be able to give yourself the freedom to carry on doing something that so many people love, like traveling. It doesn't have to be, you know, a 15-hour flight, but to do that, I think, is a really nice thing to do. And obviously, like, baby moons have become a very popular thing, haven't they?
Totally. Yeah, that second trimester, if you can get on a trip and do that baby moon, is really a great idea.
I'll never forget my baby moon.
Where did you go?
We went to Lake Como in Italy.
Wow.
Have you been?
That's a great spot. We've been like through it. We haven't like had a proper stay though.
Oh my goodness. You do. The Italian lakes in general, like that is a trip.
Yeah.
That is worth it. I loved Lake Como for the sentimental reasons. And because of course it's like beautiful and glamorous.
I also, and the food and all the things.
But actually Lake Maggiore is my favorite, which is one.
Okay.
So there's Lake Garda, Lake Como and Lake Maggiore. And Lake Maggiore, I've mentioned quite a few times on the podcast because they're the Italian lakes, but there's a bit at the top of Lake Maggiore that's actually owned by Switzerland. So it's got this little Swiss segment, and it's a place called Ascona. And it has these amazingly beautiful pastel colored houses looking out at this promenade with like big palm trees and towering green mountains. And they've got like this incredible blend of all the Swiss efficiency and kind of neatness with like the Italian pizzazz and like Vespers and things. And they've got a really cool wine scene. And it was just...
Okay, tell me one more time the name of it. I need to write
that down.
It's
called Ascona, A-S-C-O-N-A.
Ascona.
Yeah. And we loved it. And when I did my own travel diaries, for the 100th episode, I was interviewed and I gave my answers, and I picked it as my hidden gem. So yeah.
Okay.
I loved it.
Put it on the list.
Did you do a baby moon with one and two?
You know, before we started our like bucket list travels, my husband and our spot was French Polynesia.
Oh.
So we've been to French Polynesia multiple times, and we probably went there for both of them.
Oh my God. So, well, that's a really nice way to kind of conclude our podcast, because that is a destination at the top of my travel bucket list. So tell me a little bit about it before we finish.
Oh, French Polynesia. We've been there 9 times. Again,
oh my gosh,
we don't go back to many places, but French Polynesia is so, so special. The water is unlike anything else. The people, the culture, the food. I think especially if you just really want to feel pampered.
Yeah.
And it's just so lovely. Just talk about a destination that really does a good job catering to their visitors. Tahiti does a wonderful job. But again, it's also like Hawaii, where every island is different. So when you go, let me know, and I'll give you all the different like islands, because everyone's a different vibe.
Would Tahiti be top, your favorite?
Like the island of Tahiti, you mean? No. My favorite is one called Rangiroa, which is in a kind of a different chain of islands, and it's very, very remote, and it's like this little atoll that has an inlet that like throughout the day, the tide goes in and out, and it's got these drift dives and snorkels, and you'll see sharks and dolphins and beautiful reef. And it's just this, you can bike around the island, and that's my favorite spot. It's called Rangiroa.
Fantastic. Jess, it has been so lovely to chat to you today. Those were your travel diaries, your family travel diaries. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Oh, thank you so much, Jess, for joining me on the podcast. I really enjoyed that one. Jess's new book, National Geographic Bucket List Family Travel, Share the World with Your Kids on 50 Adventures of a Lifetime, is out now and available wherever books are sold. You can follow Jess and her family's travels on Instagram at The Bucket List Family. Before we wrap up, I also wanted to give a few thank yous for some baby travel gear we've been sent that we are now recommending to everyone. Loads of people have told us about the Baby Bjorn travel cot, and we've been using that whenever we go away in the UK now. Like a lot of my friends, we found it particularly easy to assemble and move around. And we've also just been sent the Rye Rye Scallop travel car seat, which we're about to test out on a road trip around Portugal. It's a portable but safe car seat, so I'm really interested to try that out. Thanks so much for listening today. If you'd like to hear more from the podcast, don't forget to hit subscribe, or if you use Apple Podcasts, to press follow so that a new episode lands in your podcast app each week. If you want to be the first to find out who is joining me on next week's episode, come and follow me on Instagram. I'm at Holly Rubenstein, and you'll also find me on Threads and TikTok. I'd love to hear from you. And if you can't wait till then, remember there's the first 10 seasons to catch up on. That's over 115 episodes to keep you busy there. Don't forget that all the destinations mentioned by my guests are included in the episode show notes here on your podcast app and listed on my website, thetraveldiariespodcast.com. Thanks again, everyone. Take care, and I'll be back next week. Today's episode is supported by Airbnb, and what a great partnership. If you're a longtime listener of the Travel Diaries, you probably know that we love to put our home on Airbnb when we're traveling. Like last autumn when we took the family to Puglia, we put our house on Airbnb when otherwise it would just be sitting empty, which meant that we earned some extra money that went towards our flights and maybe some souvenirs too. Hosting on Airbnb for us is also a family affair. My mum is an Airbnb superhost. She regularly has guests stay in her little chalet in her garden. And my dad, who lives in France, has his home on Airbnb so that when he comes back to visit, he is earning some extra money while he's away. My dad is 80 and he only started hosting on Airbnb a couple of years ago. So hopefully that shows you how straightforward the whole experience is. He found it so easy to list his house that I think he's got all his pals signing up now too. And it really is straightforward. You can choose whether you want to rent out your entire home or just some rooms. Alex and I, for example, list our spare bedroom, and that works really well for us. So if you have a trip coming up and you want to earn some extra money while you're away, your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.co.uk/host. That's airbnb.co.uk/host. Thank you to Airbnb.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.